you said at the beginning of your lecture, if I remember rightly, that human relationships are characterized by equality and freedom, and that the relationship between the teacher and pupil was such a human relationship. During the last few days, we've been having a closer look at schools, and during these days, I've been reminded of an incident in the Rainbow by D.H. Lawrence, where he describes how Ursula has great aspirations of being one of the greatest teachers of all time. He describes how she goes to school hoping to attract pupils' interest and attention by offering them some form of human relationship. But in the end, her hopes are dashed because she finds that nearly everyone in the class is incapable of responding, reciprocating this relationship. Would you say then that the relationship between a teacher and his pupil is the same sort of human relationship as those between adults? And if not, how does it differ?
Well, it differs, of course, because the teacher is older than the pupils, I don't think in any other essential way, and knows a lot more. But may I answer the question as you asked it? As you put it, and I can't quite remember, I know the reference, here you have a teacher, a lady teacher, whose ambition is to be a great teacher. I suppose that, and she then offers some kind of personal relation to the children, in order, no doubt, that she should be a great teacher. She's not concerned with the children at all, and naturally they resented it and wouldn't have it. One thing I should say about a great teacher is that he doesn't ever think about being a great teacher. He's much too concerned with the children that he teaches and with the respect for them. The teacher can't give personal relations to a child. The child is on an equality with him in this. The child can refuse if he wishes to refuse. And if he refuses, there's nothing you can do about it. That is part, again, of the characteristic of human relations, that you are helpless. The trouble is that people then, finding this, try to use methods to produce the result thereafter. Very often methods of violence or something of that kind. I mean, the worst kind of violence, which is a mental or spiritual violence, to make people respond to their offers as they think them of friendship or personal relations. And that at once shows that they don't know what they're doing. They're doing something that is impossible, and if you put it into simple language, is they're saying, love me or I'll hit you over the head. Could anything be sillier? No. That strikes me at once when you tell a story like that, or when Lawrence tells the story. Here you've got somebody who's got the idea of teaching by being a friend to the children, but in fact is so taken up with her own success that she sees in the future the children are merely being used as tools for what she wants. I like the rather sentimental old story of the famous teacher who never entered a classroom without taking his hat off to the children there and explained that he did so because some of them might be very great people someday and credit to the world. He never thought of them being credit to him. He was a great teacher. But he had that, showing it in this rather odd way, this sense of the first thing that you need as a teacher is respect for the people that you're teaching. And respect for their rights as human beings. They have no right to interfere. If you're going to have their friendship, they must give it freely. And it's up to you to be the kind of person whom children do respond to in that way. If they don't, you'd better ask what's the matter with you. Because children do, in fact, respond immediately, unless something very drastic has happened to them in the world outside or at home. They do respond to friendship, with friendship. But they are much quicker than grown-ups to smell insincerity. The moment that smell reaches their nostrils, they draw back, and they are perfectly right. But don't forget that children know far more about human relations, about what good human beings are, about what good conduct is, than most grown-ups, who have forgotten it because they've developed so many twists and turns in dealing with the world outside them. They are innocent in that sense. They're innocent in that they see straight and haven't learned to see twisted. I always remember a story that I read about Alexander, the manipulative surgeon, who did quite miraculous things with children who had grown up physically twisted. There was a little girl whose mother brought him along. She walked very lopsided all the time, couldn't stand straight. And after a good deal of manipulation, he said to her, "Now, do it as straight on her feet, standing straight up. Walk like that to your mother." And the child staggered across, but keeping straight, to her mother, and threw herself into her mother's arms and said, "Oh, mother, I'm all twisted." Awfully like a great many of us grown-ups. We've got so used to our own twistiness that if we were put straight, we would think we were twisty then.